Hello, human peoples. You're listening to the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. Support us and gain access to great exclusive podcasts like Fox Mulder is a Maniac, Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, Star Trek The Next Futurama, and our latest show, Spiel Boys. Head over to patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We do game streaming, movie nights with our patrons every Friday night, and you can even commission your own podcast about anything you want. Literally anything, within reason, and we have to do it. You are quite frankly out of excuses not to go visit patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/gamefully unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds. Hey, Dave, take it outside.
I will not take it outside, Tom.
Because outside is the ocean.
Exactly. Hi, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
My name is Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Roadhouse. 2024, Roadhouse, two words, Florida.
Zero knife beat. I was very disappointed.
But one crocodile.
But a crocodile.
So let's do this.
Which is the knife boot. It's like an aquatic knife boot.
A friend of mine suggested I come talk to you. I own a roadhouse out in the Florida Keys. Lately, it's been attracting the wrong clientele. I can pay you good money. Judging by your car, you need that.
Well, I like my car.
Think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're all like tough and leathery, but also they have a mouthful of knives. It works. Trust me.
I'm almost certain that's why they did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck. Okay. Yeah. So this is straight to Amazon. Jake Gyllenhaal. Doug Liman, one of the writers of The Nice Guys.
Doug Liman, for people who may not know, he's a director. He directed The Bourne Identity.
The Bourne Identity.
A number of other movies. He also directed Swingers. But like that note, I think he also did Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But anyway.
Yeah.
He's a director of some note.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he is. And I brought up The Nice Guys writer because I was like, 40-50 minutes into this, mm-hmm. and I stopped and went, what's going on here? And I like looked it up and saw that name and went, oh, that's what's going on. And that puts the movie in a little perspective for people, that I like had a moment with the dialogue where I was like, something's up, something's happening, I need to know what. So there's something going on here that I need to solve. Tom, how'd you like Roadhouse?
I liked it. I thought it was a fine companion piece to the original Roadhouse. I like that it sticks pretty close to it. So it was fun, like, watching how they reinterpret each scene, because it is one thing I did appreciate is that it's a bona fide reinterpretation. Like, they moved the setting to the Florida Keys, so much of it is on the water, which is cool. It's cool. It's, if you're going to do a remake, why not? You might as well do, you should, it's a good idea to do something to mix it up a little bit, right? So changing the location to a completely different setting was a cool idea.
I think it was important when it's sort of that thing where you're remaking something and you're like, I don't want to draw some, like, where it's like the original thing is already great.
Right.
So it's like,
it's Roadhouse.
Yeah. Let's, so the idea is like, let's bring it as far away from the original in terms of like location. Let's mm-hmm. make it our own, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of loved this movie. This is the first movie I think this year that came out this year that I think I'm like, oh, I love this. Like, I'm trying to think, like, obviously I've seen movies from 2023 this year, but in terms of 2024 movies, this is, I think, the first one that made me like, I had a great time. Like, I wish I got to see this in theaters.
This would have done very well in theaters right now. It's so crazy that they wouldn't put it in theaters.
Yeah. I think it's extremely well written for an action movie.
I think this.
That's why I looked it up. That's why I was like, who wrote this? And then I saw it was The Nice Guys person. I'm like, oh. Because it's not just the dialogue. It's, I think, the entire movie is so efficient.
The entire movie, and the way that everything's been reimagined, like the way they've reimagined Dalton, they make him rather than, I mean, the original has an appeal because it's a ridiculous movie made in the 80s. I don't think it would be hard to get away with it today, I think, without being tongue-in-cheek. And Roadhouse, the original Roadhouse, is not tongue-in-cheek.
No.
It's about a world of mercenary bouncers where Dalton is famous and everybody just knows all these cool bouncers like they're trading their baseball cards or something.
Right. It's a great world. It's a world I want to live in, but it's not the real world.
Right. Yeah, it's not the real world. So this movie, they reimagine Dalton as a UFC fighter who killed a guy in the ring. So like that immediately explains why everybody knows who he is in certain contexts. Not everybody knows who he is, but like like a couple of people will recognize him, and in the context of like the first scene is him going to an underground prize fight. Everybody knows who he is there.
I want to talk about that scene.
Yeah, it's a great scene. So they take care of everybody knowing who he is, and everybody kind of being in awe of him, and there being this mystique about him, and there being this people are afraid of him.
Why it's that plus he's down on his luck. Like that combination of being famous but down on your luck, because they don't tell us right away what he did, and I think that's important. Is they stagger it out, and it's a great reveal, because the other thing about the character this version of Dalton, and I believe honestly, the original version of Dalton, is he's very positive.
Yes,
he's very happy. He's very calm, and you learn. Oh, he's that because he's trying to control himself. And if you piss him off, he's going to fly off the handle, and he's trying desperately to stay composed.
They identified
it's the Hulk.
he's Bar Hulk. He's ballet karate Hulk. It's one of the good thing, one of the smart and efficient, clever ways that they've reinterpreted the whole thing is they focused on the things that were, like, they actually identified what was the key elements of Dalton's character, because you could have just very easily just made him another tough guy that, you know, but like the whole one of the things that makes Roadhouse unique is Patrick Swayze, and he's playing a Patrick Swayze type, so he's very cool and calm and charming and very nice. Like, he doesn't seem like a guy who blows his top and then he hauls off and whoops ass. They found, like, they correctly identified that as being something that would need to be present in a Roadhouse remake.
Yes.
And it transitions. Once you think about it from that context, the fact that they cast Jake Gyllenhaal makes total sense.
Exactly. So the casting of Gyllenhaal is perfect, because you look at Swayze and you go like, yes, he's an action guy, but he also did romance movies, and he
wasn't at the time. Like, Roadhouse was kind of, I think, it was Roadhouse and then Point Break he did back to back.
But like, above all else, he was ultimately an actor, right? We look at Patrick Swayze, we don't go like, oh, that's an action guy. We go like, that's an actor. He did a lot of different things. Jake Gyllenhaal, I love that they started with the idea of, like, the character of Dalton, we need a good actor. We need someone to really, like, nail this role. And he kind of makes the whole movie. Like, his attitude, his performance is, like,
he's
pivotal.
So,
it's crucial. It's amazing.
He's very, very fun, and it's perfect. It's such a fun way to play Dalton. It's identifiably Dalton, but not exactly the same.
Right.
So it does the thing. It does the fun thing about, if you guys have been listening to Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, where we've been watching The Batman, the 2004 animated series, and that's a big reinterpretation of all the characters. And like, when it's done well, like, a remake should have that should be part of the fun of watching a remake is, oh, I wonder how they're going to do, like, what is this thing going to look like in this new version? And they find a new and clever way to do it. And they keep, like, they have pretty much all of the same scenes for the most part. There's a few things they cut out and a few things they add, but for the most part, it's like, you can tell they're the same scenes, just kind of like totally redone for this new setting. It's a fucking blast to watch this movie. One of the big things in this movie is there's no Sam Elliott character. That character has been deleted.
Yes. Which, you know, that's a little bit of a shame, but things they do in this that I actually thought was really good is, like, in the original Roadhouse, there's kind of this feeling of like, all right, time to train everybody. You know, we're all going to train to become better bouncers. And this, it kind of happens more casually. it's very natural, where like he comes on and he does the Dalton thing where he's just sitting at the bar. He doesn't get involved unless he absolutely has to. But like they sort of more naturally do it, where they don't have like it, I think it's because this is not the 80s where things don't have to be explained as much. So like you kind of have this vibe where he shows up and you see the other guys and they're struggling, and then Gyllenhaal just gives a few pointers to one of the guys and he slowly starts figuring it out. And I feel like in Roadhouse there's like literally a scene where they're like, we're bringing in a new guy to train you all, that's not in this. Like there's little efficiencies like that. Like I love the first three scenes of this movie in terms of writing and establishing Dalton, because the first scene is a bare knuckle boxing, and it's brutal, and this guy is just ruining
Malone,
people.
Dave.
Yeah, I know it is. They don't use that
Post
name.
Post Malone is ruining people.
Yeah, this guy is ruining people, and it's really brutal. And then this guy, someone comes in on a hoodie and they're like, new challenger. And it's fucking Jake Gyllenhaal. It's Dalton. He reveals himself, and Post Malone is just like, fuck this, and leaves. And Jake Gyllenhaal gets the money. He doesn't have to fight. He doesn't have to fight for a moment. That's such a good, that's like, you just show someone who's even more of a badass, look at him and go, fuck that. And leave. And it's like, oh, okay. Immediately, we know who Jake Gyllenhaal is.
Well, and then the very next scene is him walking out to his car. And then this dude who, like, lost a bunch on that bet comes out. It's like, hey, motherfucker, you got to go back in there and fight. And stabs him. And Gyllenhaal doesn't react. Like, Dalton is just looking at him. And he just says in his very calm, like, friendly tone of voice, like, are you sure you thought this through?
Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, he's an ultra badass.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, and he has a shitty car and he sleeps in his car.
Yeah, he has a shitty car that he loves and sleeps in. And he doesn't have a phone. Like, we learn so much of the exposition in that scene is so good. They have Jessica Williams plays the roadhouse owner in this movie. And their scene when she's coming out to talk to him gets so much of that done, because it's like, we know he lives in, look, I'll pay you $5,000 a week for a month. That's $20,000. He's like, yeah, that's all right. And looking, judging by your car, you need it. Oh, I like my car. Well, at least let me give you your number. I don't have a phone. Like, it's like we're establishing so much about him in this fun back and forth, but it doesn't feel like exposition.
And he throws the number on the dashboard, and you get this feeling of like he's trying to punish himself.
Yeah.
Just from his refusing this, like, really, like, he's clearly not.
He's obviously desperate. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're like, wow, why doesn't he take this job? And then the next scene is he parks his car in the train tracks and basically plays chicken with the train. And you realize, like, oh, he wants to die. And so in these three scenes, you know everything you need to know about Dalton.
Yep.
For the movie to start. And then why he chose to go to the roadhouse. Because he's like, I'm in rock bottom. Like he basically blinks at the last moment. He sits on the train tracks and then he panics. So you know, oh, he doesn't actually want to die. Like, that's the idea, right? Is he goes to kill himself and then stops.
He's struggling, but he's not. Yeah.
Right. And it's a moment where it's like, well, I might as well take this job if I'm not going to die.
Because also he wrecks his car. Is the other thing.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Like, he barely, like, the car won't start when he changes it, so he barely makes it off the track, and the train clips him, so his car is ruined. He has to go to Miami. Or not Miami, down to Florida.
Yeah, it's either that or die, and he's decided, like, I don't want to die. And it's all kind of said without dialogue.
Right, it's what's good. Another thing that's good about it is it's still identifiably Dalton. Like, I'm a huge fucking fan of the original Roadhouse, as I assume you are too, Dave. But
yeah,
it's a movie I've seen a lot. It's a movie I've been watching for a lot of my life. So I was coming into this, you know, like, if it didn't feel like Roadhouse, I would have been disappointed. But like, these immediately, like, they're painting Dalton like he's different, but still identified with the same character. And Gyllenhaal's performance is so much fun. And they add this other dimension to him, which is not, it's not different, because Dalton is self-destructive in the original Roadhouse. Like, he's got that, like you pointed out earlier, it's this rage or whatever that his bad sad that he's got to keep tamped down with all this Zen stuff. So he's still identifiably the same guy, but I just can't say enough about how much fun it was for me being a huge Roadhouse fan to watch this movie for every way they would sort of tinker with the original story and still have it feel the same. And
yes,
just the first couple of scenes, like you said, at introducing us to Dalton are so good that it's like, oh, right away, this movie is like, oh, shit, okay, here we go. Which actually leads me to the negative thing that I do have to say about this movie is I think it loses a lot of steam in the back half. And I think the finale is underwhelming. It's not as good as the original.
Really? I mean, it's definitely not as good as the original, but I really like... I'm like, a nice good one-on-one to me is...
Oh, I like really that. Appreciate. I like that it ends with a cool-ass one-on-one with him and Conor McGregor, but like the other stuff around it kind of... Well, the boat stuff was okay, but like the original is like, he goes to their house and like finally storms Ben Gazzara's mansion, like blows up his house, kills all these... Yeah, he goes on a revenge rampage. He traps that dude beneath a stuffed bear. And I like that we still had that character, but he was reimagined. He's just like a really nice guy who just wanted to join a motorcycle club.
That guy was great. And he's just like, listen, man, I'm getting out of here.
They find a really fun guy. It's the guy in the trailer who is like, he Gyllenhaal breaks his arm, but the guy like still kind of likes him. He's like, no, he was kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the first actual fight with him is a delight because it's basically all these bikers who've been sent there to harass the Roadhouse. And Gyllenhaal does. It reminded me actually of Home Movies, where if you remember the Emo Phillips plays a bully in that, and Brendan tries to fight him and he's like, okay. First of all, do you have health insurance? Like, he asks him all the things where he's like, do you have any allergies? And it's just like clear he's going to kick his ass. They basically do the exact same thing here, where Gyllenhaal takes him outside and he's just like, okay, so where's the closest hospital? Are you guys insured? What's up? Like he's customizing the ass kicking.
Right.
And it's that's always a delight. And then I really liked, then he drives them to the hospital after beating them all up.
Carpools them all to the hospital. Yeah. It's such a funny fucking scene.
It's so good because it's the badass, but he's nice. He's driving and he goes, bump.
Right. He warns them of a bump. That's such a good fucking gag. Oh, my
God. It's so good. Again, it's very nice, guys, because I think what it is...
Go ahead.
It's just that... It's the thing that I think Joss Whedon was trying to be that didn't... I don't think he pulled off, which is that it's meta, but it's not meta in a self-referential way.
It's not meta in a, like, commenting on what we're doing way. It's meta in a way that's, like, imagining a real person in this situation.
Yes.
Because, like, movies, you know, it just, we very, it just doesn't normally happen. So it's just, like, a fun thought experiment you might do watching a movie. It's like, what would I think or say if, like, fucking Terminator showed up and was like, come with me if you want to live? I'd be like, well, I got to go back to my apartment first. I can't just leave from here. You know, I'm wearing one pair of underwear and I've already been wearing it for a day.
Right. It's basically the best meta moments, I think, is when a trope happens, a classic movie trope happens. And then, a character responds in a very grounded way, pointing out how silly this is, like, or when it's just generally subverted. One of my favorites is the guy who shows up and has a gun in his belt and he lifts up his shirt and he's like, come with me. That happens in so many action movies, and the hero usually comes with that person. And in this one, Dalton's like, why?
And he's like, no.
No, you still have to pull that gun out. We're in public. I'm going to break your fingers.
Right. I love the way it plays out, because he's just like, nah, and starts walking away and the guy's yelling at him. So Dalton turns and walks towards him as he's talking until he's right up into his face. So he doesn't say that bit until he's too close to him. So he's like, so now I'm too close to you to pull it out.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
If you do, I'm just going to break your hand.
Yeah, it's like, that's a great moment where it's like this movie trope is just shut down immediately. Yeah. Going back to the finale, I agree that the original Roadhouse, the rampage is better. Yeah. But I actually do kind of like what they were going for here, which is that, so correct me if I'm wrong, but when Patrick Swayze goes off the handle and rips out throats and stuff, that like happens in like an afternoon, right? Like it's a burst.
Well, it's the evil guy, evil bouncer comes to attacks him at his house after blowing up the farmer's house.
Right.
And fights him. And they have their fight on the bank of the little lake in between his house and Ben Gazzara's house. And that's when he does the first throat rip. And then there's like an escalation for a couple of days after that. Because then like the doc won't talk to him. And then Ben Gazzara's like, you've got to choose between her and Sam Elliott. And he, you know, that whole thing happens.
Right.
So it's at least like a day or two. It's when Sam Elliott gets killed is when he does the revenge rampage. So it's like 24 to 48 hours after the first throat rip.
That's about the same here. What I like about this is that he turns into like a serial killer in this. And that's, I liked that idea that it's like, he's like weird and meticulous. Like he kills a man. He punches him in the throat. That's the new throat rip. It's not as good as the throat rip, but he punches a man in the throat and just murders him. And then he takes his body. And I was like, what are you, Jeffrey Dahmer? Like, what are you doing? And he takes the body and puts it on ice and then like plants it with this cop.
Yep.
And I also love that he tells the cop this really badass speech about how like, oh yeah, with short-term memory versus long-term memory and a concussion, all I have to do is hit you and you won't even know I'm here. And then he's wrong. I love that he's wrong.
Such a good bit, because it's the only time in the movie that Dalton is wrong.
Yeah, and it's like this badass speech, and then the cop shows up like the next day, and he's like, "There he is."
Or he's like, "Where's the money?" He's like, "I didn't take the money." Yeah. My deputy told me that you did, and then he told me this weird speech you gave him about short term memory. And then Dalton goes like, "Shit."
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, then yeah, I did take it.
Like that's another subversion, right? Where it's just like, it's just like,
because he's been right
thing
the
you
entire
did was actually
movie.
Dumb.
Yeah. He's done things like that the entire movie where he's been very meticulous, and it's all, like the scene you mentioned, their new version of the throat rip scene is that he punches that guy and he's like, I just crushed your hyoid bone.
Right.
You're never going to breathe again is the point here.
Yeah.
And then it's still like, it has the same effect as the throat rip where you're like, God damn, but it's
right,
just different.
It's cold. Well, yeah, that's the thing. Again, it's more meticulous. It's more serial killer like. Like him explaining to a man how this man is about to die. It's
right.
Like, Jesus Christ, like,
yeah, so like I think the doc in the original would have been more horrified if she'd walked in on this display than Patrick Swayze's display, but anyway, I brought it up because like that's a scene where he's being very meticulous and cool and badass, and it's right, so it just makes the money gag
it's great,
land so much harder, because it's the first and only time he's wrong in the movie. It's just for this little gag.
Yeah,
shit. Well, then, yeah, I did take the money.
It's a fun little gag. I don't know. I love, like, he blows up the boat and then has to save himself from the situation he created. Like, I like that it gets, like, dark. It's very dark, and he is very, like, he's not particularly smart. Like, he's just
he's just a guy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's just, he's on a tear, and he's, like, creating problems for himself. So, I don't know. I see what you mean, where it's like, yeah, compared to Roadhouse, the original, it's not as good, but I did still like the spin they made on it, where like it just felt a little more meticulous in a weird way, little creepier. Like it felt darker, honestly, because I think, I'm not saying Roadhouse isn't dark.
Right, the original Roadhouse is darker than you remember. Every time I watch it, it's like, oh, this movie is kind of fucked up a little bit. Like,
yeah, oh yeah. But this just felt like, yeah, I don't know, weirdly dark. I liked, I mean, the bookstore stuff, the tree, I liked that stuff. The moment that bookstore shows up, I'm like, well, they're going to burn down that bookstore.
Yeah, that's the one that's going to get burned, yeah.
Yeah. But it was a good save the cat, because he goes into town and he immediately befriends this
girl,
teenage girl and her dad. And you're just like, you like him. Again, you like him.
Yeah.
It's very well done.
Yeah, they make us. That's another good thing about meeting out the reveal of what it is he's done, because we already like him by the time we realize that the thing he did was pretty shitty and unforgivable. Like,
right. Yeah. No. They have the villain tell us about it, which is a very good way. That feels like a Shane Black move.
That was a really good scene.
Yeah, because
like a
you
surprisingly
have the villain.
Good scene.
Yeah, the villain shows up, and basically the idea is like the villain knows the villain's this little weasel. Great introduction.
Billy
he's being
Magnuson.
Shaved on a boat. Yeah. Getting shaved on a boat and punches the fucking captain because it's too bumpy. Yep. It's good villain. Very good villain. But he basically goes into the bar at one point and he's just sort of like, so I can't really intimidate you. I can't really bribe you. And then they just talk like, and he talks about, he's like, which punch do you think is that did it? Like referring to this fight.
Right. What, what happens
and
is
he's basically where he's revealing that he killed this guy in the ring, yeah. his friend. Mm. And it's a good thing for the villain reveal because it's revealing the sins of this character. So who better to deliver
it's
that?
Just such a good, it's a good character thing for the villain too, because at this point we've seen like he's tried to intimidate him with the sheriff and that hasn't worked. He's tried to come at it from a couple of different ways. So he comes and sits down next to him at the bar and Dalton looks at him. He goes like, oh, so it's your turn now. He's like, my turn. Oh, I'm not here to, I'm just here to, you know, I'm just here hanging out. Anyway, I tracked down this video. It's really hard to find because it's been scrubbed from YouTube. Like, he doesn't even waste time with, like, threats or anything. All he does is he sits down, he shows him the YouTube video of him murdering a guy in the ring, killing a guy in the ring, and then just gets up and walks away. He doesn't say anything else.
Yeah, he's just trying to rattle him a little bit because it's like, he also says, like, I mean, I'd even bribe you if I thought you'd take a bribe.
Right.
Like, he does the thing where he sort of is like, all right, you're an immovable object, it sounds like.
But I know what bothers you, and it's this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they do that moment, and I love this moment, where once he's... Basically, there's a scene where he gets rocked by the secondary villain, which we'll get to.
Oh, Dale? Or Del?
Del? Conor McGregor.
Okay. That's Knox is his name.
Knox. Where Knox comes to the bar later and basically just like they practically demolish the bar. And Dalton leaves and you think, oh, this is that moment in the third act where they're like, I'm causing too much trouble for these people, I better go. And then the reveal is, of course, he's like, I'm not leaving because I'm scared. I'm leaving because of what I'll do to them.
Right. I don't like, want to kill a bunch of people.
Yeah. If I don't leave, I'm going to murder everybody. And then he sees the bookstore and it's burnt down. And he's like, well,
now I have to murder everybody.
And I like that. I like how little he kind of seems to give a shit about the roadhouse itself. Like, he doesn't seem particularly like connected to it.
No.
Jessica Walters, it's the job, like there's this, she kind of has hid things from him. And so, like, he doesn't really like her that much.
Jessica Williams.
Williams, sorry.
Walters is a different.
Jessica Walters is Arrested Development, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I've been watching that. She'd be good in this, too. As the Sam Elliott role.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Fucking people up.
Jessica Williams is a good choice in this, by the way.
Yeah,
she's really
great.
Fun.
Yeah.
Shit, I forget where I was going with this. Yeah, that's all. It's all to say that it's very good villains, and I guess we should talk about Knox because that felt very Shane Black. The character Knox. I don't know anything about Conor McGregor for the record.
He's a bad person, so keep that in mind.
he's playing a bad person.
He has collected sexual assault allegations.
Oh, that sucks, man. Yeah, because when they say introducing Conor McGregor in this, that was introducing him to me, basically.
He's a UFC guy. He's a big time. He's a legitimate.
I knew he was a UFC guy, and I knew that he was like a piece of shit, but I didn't know much else.
He's a legitimate, terrifying man.
That's a shame because this is a fantastic use of him.
He's
in this.
Right because he's the character is so fun in this movie.
He's basically the T-Rex in Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
he's not good or bad. He just is to the point that at the end they do a post credits where he survived.
He lived. Yeah. He's simply too crazy to die.
Yeah. He's introduced naked walking down the street and he burns down a fucking clothing stand and steals clothing. And it's done like Doug Liman normally isn't this like Doug Liman got the assignment. That's the other thing is he doesn't normally do things this fun.
Like, no, he doesn't like, really.
Yeah, and he's shooting
Didn't he do Lift, I Repeat?
I'm not saying he isn't fun. Like, he doesn't do anything this weird. In, like, the editing and stuff, it was a lot more... It felt a lot more Shane Blacky. Like, he did a good job with this script.
It was a little more cheeky than you would expect. At least in the first... I still think the first half is stronger, but... Yeah, it's not something you normally see from this director. He doesn't. Right. And
but you're right, it's not completely off. It's just like, it's nice to see him be kind of a chameleon and do something that's a little more
It's a little louder and a little more yeah, on its face kind of more fun and a little
For the record, he directed Swingers.
For sure, yeah. I just thought it was again more with the reinterpretation thing. It's cool that they managed to find a way to make this corny in the same way that Roadhouse is corny, but not, they had to correctly identify what makes an action movie corny in 2024.
Right.
When you're doing it in earnest, not when you're doing it tongue in cheek, like a Sharknado, which is what Roadhouse is. Roadhouse is corny as hell, but it's not trying to be, it takes itself very seriously.
Right. And this is a little sillier, but not, again, it's not like meta funny, just a little
right.
Yeah. He also did Go, Swingers and Go and Mrs. or Mrs. Smith. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
he gets it.
He can do this. Yeah, man. Yeah, Go is a fun movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Conor McGregor, man. It's
there's a scene.
I just wanted to say he goes through the entire movie posed like a strong man. Like his arms are perpetually in front of him.
He never wears a shirt.
Never wears a shirt, and he always has a 100 megawatt grin on his face. Like he never stops grinning with all of his teeth.
He's the Joker
walking around like a cartoon strongman. He's fucking hilarious in this movie.
He's chaos.
Yeah,
they literally have a scene, and this isn't on, I mean, he did great, but this was another one. I think this was the moment I looked up who wrote it, where they introduce him as chaos a few times, and then later in the film he's gone for a bit and he comes back to the villain's house and he is driving a student driver car while drinking like 5 coconuts.
Yeah.
Like cracked open coconuts with a straw. And they never explain why he's doing those two things. Why he got this student driver car and all these coconuts.
Right. We get this whisper of this just pure marauding event he went on.
Yeah.
Like between the scenes.
This rampage. He's a GTA character.
Yes,
like
he
it's
is.
Like he's playing GTA. Where it's like he can't die. Literally to the end. The ending is him leaving the hospital like in GTA.
Yeah.
And now I want this writer and Doug Liman to make a GTA movie.
Yeah, they should.
I think they could pull it off.
Yeah.
No, and so like it's a great use of this because he's not really the villain, despite being the villain in real life. It's more of like
he's the
a force of nature. Yeah, he's a sub-boss, but it's like, he ends up killing the villain.
He does.
Just casually. He's like, what will it take to shut you up? And just breaks his neck. And it's more just that, like, he's obviously the bigger threat.
Yeah.
Like, the villain's a little weasel. Dalton could murder him in a second. But it's just the fact that they make it so that he's almost, like, neutral. Where it's like, he doesn't... You point him at things, and you pay him, and he'll do that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he is a bit Joker-ish. Although, I mean, Joker is pretty more directly the antagonist in that movie, but it is sort of... Yeah, you said it better earlier, the T-Rex in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
He's like, just like he's a problem they have to deal with occasionally.
To the point that the villain doesn't want him there. I love that the villain's dad is who sends him. And then like the second time he sees him show up, he's like,
oh, this
can
fucking
someone
guy.
Can someone get him out of here?
Don't let him on the boat.
He doesn't want to deal with him, and he's just he's heading right towards them on a boat, big old smile, and he's just like, fuck. It's like bringing a grenade to a knife fight, you know, like it's just like nobody's happy that he's there. Like,
well, this escalated in ways that nobody wanted.
Yeah.
They have a brief fight. He and Gyllenhaal have a brief fight on a little boat, and he kicks him off on a little speedboat, and he kicks McGregor off. So he grabs the anchor line and just is holding onto it as they're racing back to shore, and he still has the gigantic smile on his face.
Yeah, he loves every second.
It's
a terrifying idea.
It's a perfectly executed character.
I pitched a wrestler this way. Is like a wrestler that's never not smiling would be horrifying, even when he's hurt. Like just always smiling would be really fun. Yeah, that's also when he goes like, "Here's our own little octagon," and he goes, "Who taught you shapes?" A lot of little lines like that where I'm like, this is a delightful.
When they're fighting later and he's banging Gyllenhaal's head on the piano a couple of times, and he says, "I think this piano's out of tune."
Sounds good to me.
And McGregor's like, "Sounds fine to me."
Yeah. Yeah, this is, again, very fucking Shane Black without Shane Black there.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that was what was interesting is seeing one of the writers of The Nice Guys that isn't Shane Black. I kind of got the vibe of like, now I want to go back and watch The Nice Guys because I think this writer, it's all the Shane Blackness with none of the divorcedness. Does that make sense?
I feel like like the gags, this writer feels like the gags on the steps in The Nice Guys. Hey, what about the gas mask? They didn't save you?
Yeah, and a lot more of the dialogue gags. It's just interesting to listen to this dialogue. And now I'm just like very excited for what this person's going to write. Because again, along with the dialogue, which, you know, like it's not amazing, but it's I really enjoyed it. The plot structure, that alone was made me go like, damn, this is like, it's just so tight, you know?
Yeah.
This person is making Doc Savage, a Shane Black film. Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
They're making Jekyll.
Sure, Jekyll. Let's do it. Yeah. Why not? It's about time. We're due for another Jekyll and Hyde movie.
Yeah, why not? Oh, they're writing the next two Shane Black movies. So yeah, this person is, doing a lot of the Shane Black. And they just did Roadhouse on the side, I guess. Or maybe he did punch-ups. Like, there's a few writers credited to this. But you can feel it, right? Like, you can feel the Nice Guys in this movie.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the fighting. Because I looked that up.
There's been a little bit of controversy around it, yeah.
So this has fighting that I was like, now, how did you do that movie?
With pillows, turns out.
Yes. Yes. They had the actors basically do multiple takes. One where they just fake fought. I assume they did like, you know, they just whiffed at each other or whatever. They then did a version where they had the actor stage fighting. Yeah. They did a version where they had them basically slam into a pad, punch a pad. It's how apparently this visual effects person did it on Avatar as well. Where basically they would punch a punching bag, essentially. And then they would hit the other person with, like you said, basically a pillow, a pad. They'd hit them really hard and they could then do their performance. Cause a lot of this is like people getting punched, not
directly in the face, man.
Right. But they're all badasses. So they don't really like react the way you and I would.
No.
They don't just like immediately buckle and go, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry."
I think I would just die for some of these punches. So,
these scenes have these hits where you're just like, that's a punch. He just punched that man and it connected. And it's just like, you've never seen it as visceral. And that's all to say that it was done with CGI.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. There are stunts in this movie. There is choreography. There is fights.
Right. It's just the fights are blended with the CG. There's a lot of CG blending. I think it's a mostly good balance in this movie.
Compositing.
There it is.
Yeah, I agree because it was interesting because this really tested me because I'm not a fan of CGI action. And like the car scene also felt like a CGI. Remember when they attack him with a car on the bridge?
It was,
bridge?
Yeah, it was, yeah. When they hit him with a pickup truck. Jeez.
And then it looked pretty good, but there was like a couple.
There were a couple of janky shots and the truck never looked great in any of them.
Yeah, so that's all to say that like that scene, I was like, eh. Like it looked good. Like the shots were fun, but it was because the shots were so cartoony. I knew what I was watching wasn't real. It kind of had a coolness to it where I was like, this is cool. But I kind of would have rather seen a real stunt there. The fights on the other hand, I thought were amazing.
They were really fun. Yeah.
I think it was a really good use of CGI. I love it when CGI is used in a way where it's like, it feels like it augments something. And
yeah, in a way, we're like, oh, that's cool. We can do cool shit with that. It's like seeing Jurassic Park for the first time in some ways.
Yeah. I think what it comes down to CGI, like if it replaces something that's not interesting, like, when it's like a very basic stunt done with CGI, I'm like, I don't know why I'm impressed by this. When it's CGI used to do something I've never seen before, it immediately is just like, this is fucking awesome, you know?
Yeah. Now, I don't think this should replace, you know, traditional martial arts movies with choreography and stuff. But, you can do, like, death blows or certain fights or a couple of hits in the fight. Like, this just opens up a lot of, I don't know, you can do some really gnarly shit with this.
That's the thing is, like, we've always had a little bit of effects, right? In a martial arts movie, when someone punches someone's head off, we don't actually punch someone's head off. So it's like, there's a place for this, and you're right, is like, I don't want to see every movie do this from here on.
For every fight. No.
I'll get really bored of it. See it for the first time and to be like, wow, that's it's like the Matrix where you see the bullet effect and then every movie did it and you're like, all right, well, now it sucks.
Yeah.
Like, now I hate it. Especially since they replaced it with CGI complete. Like, the original bullet time wasn't entirely CGI, right? It was...
No.
And I could easily see this type, them going, what if we just make them the actors CGI? And it's like, well, now you've missed the point, you know? So that's all to say, I think this was done really well. But you're right that it could be a bad precedent that they're setting here.
Just in the case that any new technology is, but...
Yeah, it's not even new technology. That's what's cool, is it's more of like, it's a compositing tactic that this one visual effects guy has like they have a name for it now. I think it's named after this person. I'm scrolling. They're calling it the Garrett shot or the multiple pass or the alphabet shot, which is basically like a multi-stage process that this guy kind of perfected.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool to see in this movie, because it is, the moment you see it, you know immediately, like, I haven't seen anything like that. What's going on there? Something's going on. Like, you know, it's CG related, but since all the elements are live action, really looks great.
Combining them all. Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a tactic where it feels like they could have done this in the 2000s.
Probably.
Like, in the early, like, before CGI was good. Like, that's, I think, part of what makes it compelling, is that it's like, for a second I was like, did they replace these people with entirely CGI people? And if they did, that's amazing, because it's photorealistic. And no, they didn't. They didn't do that. They just did this really cool composites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people had an issue with it. Some people really don't think it looks good, which is, you know, it's subjective, of course.
Sure.
So there was a little bit of controversy around it. I saw on social media and on a few articles across the internet, but I thought it was pretty effective. And I hadn't seen I hadn't seen anything like it before, so I thought it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I have a theory of why it may not have looked good to people. I don't think it's the effect. I think it's the camera work, because I think the camera work in this is a little Finchery. And what I mean by that is the camera is omnipotent. It exists in no physical reality. Like, when he gets hit by the truck, that's actually what threw me off, is the camera, like, follows him onto the truck. And in this movie, they keep floating between, like, POV shot and, like, it'll go in and out of their POVs, right? Yeah. And to me, sometimes that works really well. Fincher does it very well. But the thing that you, I think, have to sacrifice there is that you're reminding the audience that what they're watching isn't real. Like, it's subconsciously taking your brain out of the movie. Whenever the camera does that, it's such a loud move, and it makes you realize, like, oh, what I'm seeing is fundamentally not real. Like, and when you do that during a fight scene, I actually think it kind of fucks up the fight scene, because you realize, oh, that thing that just happened, that stunt, isn't real. Like, oh, they, because the camera moved in such a CGI, like, artificial way, you know that there was a camera effect there. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So, like, I think it's like, it nudges the audience's brain to realize what they're seeing isn't entirely honest, which is, everybody's watching a movie. They know movies aren't real. But I think when you're watching a stunt and that happens, it just kind of, I don't know, it takes the edge off of the stunt to me, personally.
No, like totally, when, I think you're right.
Yeah, like when Indiana Jones goes under the car and he's being dragged, if the camera had like swooped through the tires and like under there, you would have then realized like, oh, it's not a stuntman doing that, right? It's just, he's on a green screen. It's not impressive.
Right. It's just one of the many elements that all work together to make movies watchable. Because like,
yeah,
if the acting's bad and the lighting's bad and the camera work is bad and the writing is bad, you're just watching like a shitty video of a bunch of people standing around somewhere delivering lines. Like,
right.
That's, you can't get into it. Like, there's so much goes into a movie that you don't think about, or any of these productions.
Oh yeah. I don't even know it's necessarily bad.
No, I'm just saying it's
right.
It's one of those things that your brain does notice in a subconscious way, and it's not it maybe isn't a load-bearing structure in this fantasy.
It's weird.
It's one of many.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because sometimes it's films doing the exact same thing and it works in some context and another. Like I said, Fincher, it works well in. Mm-hmm. Fincher loves CGI, but I think he uses it in this very like, you know, he always locks down his shots. He plans ahead. Everything is very meticulous. So you never feel that. Or like you watch Lord of the Rings, where Lord of the Rings feels like this big expansive world. Mm-hmm. And I think most of the reason why it's obvious is that they shot in a real place, right?
Yes.
They shot in New Zealand. They built these things. Then I recently watched Miss Marvel, or The Marvels. I don't know. The Marvels, I think. And I think I said this before, like, it felt claustrophobic. And I came out of the movie being like, why did that movie feel claustrophobic? It takes place in these big, expansive worlds. And then I realized none of them are real. They were always on... It's claustrophobic because they were standing on a green screen the most of the movie. And you could feel that, right? So it's just like,
just in the way that it's shot and the way they interact with each other in the scene.
Right. And it doesn't mean the movie's necessarily bad, but it's like these little tweaks that maybe take your brain out of these moments where you're like, I don't feel like I'm not invested in this. I don't feel like the stakes are high here. Mm-hmm. And that's all to say that it's the same with, I think, a stunt.
Where
if you do something with the camera that reminds the audience that what they're seeing is artificial as it's happening, then it just takes the oomph out of it. And being hit with a car.
I was just going to say, it's the reason why, like, the CG fight between the giant wolf and the giant bat monster at the end of Van Helsing is not as thrilling as, say, the kitchen fight in The Raid 2.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, here where he gets hit by the car, I didn't feel that hit because the camera did something wild at the same time. It just didn't seem as, I don't know, scary, I guess. But it varies person to person,
yeah.
Which is all to say that the camera moves in this with the punches, I didn't actually mind.
No, me either.
But I can see why people might have. I can see why people might have not liked it. I don't know.
But it was pretty sweet. Yeah,
it was pretty sweet.
I was into it. I enjoyed this movie a lot. I would have seen it in a theater. It's weird to me that they didn't put it in one. Oh, well.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't do it so they could have more of a budget, right? That was the idea, is they traded their distribution budget.
Right.
And so in that regard, I'm like, well, I'm glad it is what it is, the movie.
Right, I would have gone for the bigger budget probably too.
Yes, but I think they shouldn't have had to make that choice.
Right.
I think the Amazon should have been like, you have gold. We're going to put this in theaters as well. Like the moment they should have watched this movie and been like, this needs to go into theaters.
Yeah.
Like this is, yeah.
It's weird that they sat through this movie and weren't like, we should put this in theaters.
Right. To the point that I'm like, I bet there'll be a theatrical run late. Like if only as like fans doing it, I'm like, I want to experience this in a theater full of people.
Yeah, this would have been such a blast. Yeah, this would have been such a blast to watch.
So yeah, if you like action, watch this movie, bring friends, get it on the biggest TV you can.
With the surroundest of sounds.
Yeah, make it a party.
It's fun.
It is fun.
I got nothing else to say.
Yeah, neither do I. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Listen, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed, G-A-M-E-F-U-L-L-Y, unemployed. We have exclusive podcasts on there. Tom and Jeff watch Batman, Fox Mulder's a Maniac, Star Trek The Next Futurama, Spielboys. We watch movies every Friday night with our patrons. Movies like Roadhouse. The original Roadhouse we have absolutely watched several
times.
More
than once, yeah.
Yeah.
This will so probably be added to the rotation.
Yeah.
That's kind of
Yeah, so that's our vibes. If you want to know our vibes. And yeah, that's it. Good talking.
We also have a store. Head over to gamefullyunemployed.com where you can find a link to our Teespring store where we have all kinds of cool original artwork and designs. You can get on t-shirts, mugs, stickers, posters, all sorts of things. So slap your Roadhouse and peepers onto that.
Yeah. And let's fight. Somebody yes. out there. Let's
drink
fight.
Five coconuts and let's get into yeah. a fight.
Yeah, you will win the fight. I'm just telling you now.
Yeah.
I will lose that fight, but I'm into
but
it.
But I
it
get
fun.
Five coconuts out of it, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
God, I want a coconut now. All right, let's go. I got to go get a coconut.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Hey, listen, our music is produced by Chris Corlew. You can find him on Twitter.com as The Corlew or go to shipwreckedsailor.bandcamp.com. Our channel artwork is produced by Michael Vincent Bramley. For more of his work, go to mvbramley.art. Our episode artwork is by Justin Brown, available on Twitter as Justin T. Brown or at artnessbyjustinbrown.com. And finally, additional artwork is by Starlene Hodge. You can find her work at starlenearts.com or on Twitter as StarleneX. Cool. Goodbye.